Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Maria McKinley.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, June 8th, 2015.
We feel good about the proposal that we put out there. They're even-handed, they're consensus-based, and in the best interest of public health and safety.
A national agency studying prescription drug use says prescription drug abuse says Indiana needs to do more. Later in the show, in a WFHB community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, behind the scenes at the Monroe County Civic Theater. On Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban is giving IU Athletics $5 million to create the Mark Cuban Center for Sports Media and Technology. The project is part of the Assembly Hall renovations, which are expected to be complete by spring 2017. According to a statement from IU President Michael McRobbie, the center will be the first of its kind student-focused video broadcasting and technology center. Specific to IU Athletics, the new center will enable IU students to create a media content as they cover all 24 IU sports. The center's purpose reaches into the academic realm as well. It will partner with academic units at IU Bloomington so students in media and technology disciplines can improve their skills and create professional quality content. IU Athletics has already enlisted the support for the center from the Media School, the School of Informatics, IU Radio TV Services, and the Advanced Visualization Lab. Since graduating from IU in 1981, this is Cuban's largest gift to IU and his first known gift to IU Athletics.
The Indiana University Board of Trustees has formally approved a tuition freeze recommended by President McRobbie. The tuition freeze for Indiana residents attending IU Bloomington will last for 2 years. Non-resident students will see a 1.5% increase. The graduate school tuition changes vary, but on average there will be a 2% increase for Indiana residents and just under a 3% increase for non-residents. According to an Indiana University press release, tuition increases are at their lowest levels in nearly 40 years. At a public forum on June 3rd, McRobbie said, ensuring students leave IU with as little debt as possible is a high priority. The board's decision comes just after Purdue University announced an extension of its own undergraduate tuition freeze.
Bloomington Animal Care and Control is participating in the Humane Society's National Adopt-a-Cat Month, calling their own promotion the Great Catsby. During the spring and summer seasons, animal shelters across the country care for increased numbers of felines. Director of Bloomington Animal Care and Control, Virgil Sodders, said that it's because of feline breeding patterns.
Cats tend to have higher breeding seasons in the early spring and then throughout the warmer months. They kind of go into heat. Unlike dogs, who go into heat just a couple times a year, cats can do it repeatedly, and it tends to be increase more during the warm months. They can have litter after litter after litter. And our increase in intake is a response to the increase in litters coming to the shelter.
As part of the special program, the Bloomington Animal Shelter is offering cat adoptions at reduced fees. There is no charge for cats older than five. Adoption fees for older cats is usually $55.
The Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department is extending its deadline for online survey responses until June the 26th. The department needs residents who received a survey postcard to complete the survey in order to collect community feedback for the department's five-year master plan. The department is currently 100 surveys short of its goal. If you would like to complete the survey but did not receive a postcard, please visit bloomingtonmasterplan.com/survey.
The 9th Annual Spencer Pride Festival took place on Saturday. An estimated 1,500 people participated in activities and celebrated the LGBTQ community on the courthouse lawn. The number of families and Straight Alliance supporters rose from last year. WFHB correspondent Ryan Shade spoke with the attendees to get feedback on the festival.
Spencer Pride is known to be one of the biggest small town pride events, and that I think that's awesome. I think it's good that we have that in Indiana of all places as well, especially after what we've gone through in the recent political. And What I like about it is there's a lot of booths, there's a lot of people, it's well attended, the food's good, and yeah, when I was looking for the Quarryland booth, I was like, I'm just used to walking into a place and hey, that's the booth with the rainbow in it, and that's Quarryland, and now it was rather hard to find it because there's just so many rainbows. The town square right now is very colorful, and yeah, it's pretty.
I wasn't really sure what to expect because I'd been to a few really big Pride events like Chicago and Indy, but coming to Spencer, it's been really cool to see what a smaller one looks like. It's much more community-based. It seems like there's a lot more younger people here or adults here with their children, and it's a really nice, welcoming feeling.
It does seem a little bit more family-oriented than some of the larger Pride events.
I've never been to Spencer Pride, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful event. And we're reaching people all over the state of Indiana, and that's been exciting. What is really terrifying to me, this town has been very, very, very supportive, but so many of them are afraid to come out for the backlash from their Republican and conservative neighbors, colleagues, friends. But they're saying, we're on your side. And that's been more empowering than anything, because we've got to get their voices out there and also hopefully get them to the polls.
I think larger Pride events, not to blame them, but like a lot of people who are not part of the LGBTQ community can be kind of scared off by them, feel they're like inappropriate or something. And I think with this is kind of bridging the gap between people who can be more closed-minded, especially in Indiana, but in this community, it seems like there are a lot of people who are not even a part of this community, but are just allies who seem like they're from Spencer, and it seems like it's drawing more people than just our community.
Well, I think it gives the transgender community an opportunity to see that there are actually organizations out there that are seeking to do the right things to help support them through the issues they're going through and through their transition and whatever, if they're gender variant or gender fluid. There's someone that they can talk to that understands who they are and what their intentions are as a transgender person. Yeah, these Pride festivals are great. We've met about four or five transgender people here today. That this is the only time that they've been able to come out. Two of them was, this is the first time they've ever been out in public as their true self.
This is my passion in my older years, to help raise awareness and advocate for the transgender community.
You can't really put a price tag on how important it is to have these kind of events where people can come out and express themselves as who they are and feel safe in their environment and the community they live in.
The vendor marketplace sales at Spencer Pride increased by 25% this year compared to past festivals. Entertainers included Shorty B, The Velours, and the Ladies of Spencer Pride Drag Show. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Recent legislation at the federal and state levels has been aimed at preventing prescription drug abuse and improving treatment for those addicted. The Center for Lawful Access and Abuse Deterrence, or CLAD, their mission is to do the same, but they believe more needs to be done. WFHB News correspondent Jordan Guskey looked into the center's 2015 National Strategy Update and how Indiana shapes up for today's WFHB Community Report.
The Center for Lawful Access and Abuse Deterrence, CLAD, released its National Prescription Drug Abuse Prevention Strategy 2015 update in early May, recommending policies and beliefs that federal and state governments should adopt. Barbara Entrocka Christou practices corporate law and is completing her PhD in law and social science at Indiana University, with a research focus in pharmaceutical regulation of medications for treating addiction. Entrocka Christou believes people trust the policies of CLAD, and thus it holds a lot of sway. But she doesn't think it will be viewed equally everywhere.
The federal government, in my experience, tends to be, at least this day and age with Obama as the president, to be a little bit more progressive, I would say, in terms of policies for treating drug addiction and prevention. It's going a little bit further away from the war on drugs approach that was done by past presidents. On the other hand, the state governments, I mean, it just differs tremendously from state to state.
Indiana is a state Entrocka Christou is wary about. According to Entrocka Christou, Indiana's conservative state legislature could prove problematic, as they might be reluctant to implement some of the recommended policies, especially since there's a lot of backlash in regards to the Scott County Needle Exchange program. She thinks the policies are more likely to be implemented by the federal government and more progressive states. Kyle Simon, Director of Policy and Advocacy at CLAD, is confident in the most recent recommendations.
We feel good about the proposals that we put out there. They're even-handed, they're consensus-based, and in the best interest of public health and safety.
According to the CLAD 2015 update, of the millions suffering from substance use disorders each year, an estimated 89.6% don't receive treatment. Simon believes there are many reasons for this high number.
First off, just identifying it and referring people to treatment through primary care physicians, through even people have overdoses and go into the hospital, there's not a good continuum of care necessarily in place yet. I think the fragmented healthcare system where people, you know, a lot of people don't even have a primary care physician. I think that it's difficult to identify. And of course, when people are in the throes of a substance use disorder, may not have the willpower to do something about it. But I think also on top of that, stigma is a part of it. I think third-party payers, health insurance companies, don't necessarily want to cover that.
Central nervous system depressants, stimulants, and opioid pain relievers are the most abused controlled substances. According to the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the number of total drug-related overdose deaths per 100,000 people in Indiana has increased rapidly since 2002, reaching 14.4 per 100,000 in 2010. Through her research, Andraka Christou thinks pharmaceutical companies need a push from the federal government because these companies aren't doing enough to make less abusable drugs or develop better treatment options.
It's honestly not a place that pharmaceutical companies are particularly interested in. I would say, in general, there's a trend right now of pharmaceutical companies cutting research areas relative to, say, 10 years ago, and really just trying to hold on to the most profitable large research areas, cancer, diabetes, other areas are kind of, you know, being chucked out of the research agenda.
The federal government has attempted to aid pharmaceutical companies in creating medications that are less likely to be abused. However, they're expensive to research, and companies must prove that they are less prone to abuse than the current market version of the drug. The FDA finally put out guidance for companies this past April on how to more easily produce abuse deterrent medications. Once drugs are publicly available, CLAD recommends states implement prescription monitoring programs and educate prescribers. Prescriber education ensures doctors stay up to date on how to meet patient needs and, according to Simon, can prevent past issues.
Back in the 90s, you know, they were doling out these medications because patients wanted them and patients were happy with their physician. But now we're seeing, you know, they can be addicted when they're misused and abused. And so we need to have these controls in place where professional associations are requiring or professional boards are requiring continuing education or a minimum level of education in order to treat chronic pain, in order to prescribe, in order to dispense these medications. And when people are, when these physicians and healthcare practitioners are educated on this, it does, we have seen reductions in dispensing of these medications because they may not be appropriate, whereas before, they didn't know any different, neither the patient nor the physician nor the prescriber.
Indiana has already jumped on this issue. It requires its physicians to personally perform a physical examination and diagnosis of their patient before possibly prescribing them with a controlled substance. It also uses a prescription monitoring program called Inspect, which collects patient information for healthcare professionals and is available as an investigative tool for law enforcement. Inspect attempts to keep people from doctor shopping and ensure doctors legally prescribe medication. Simon believes it is important that states share program data with other states so people can doctor shop undetected across state lines. Inspect shares its data with 20 different states. Programs like Inspect, in conjunction with the efforts of law enforcement officials, aim to catch those engaging in illegal practices. For those caught in this manner or through some other occurrence, CLAD, Andraka Christou, and others recommend taking advantage of the situation to give the affected party the best avenue to recovery while still holding them accountable.
When someone does break the law, if they're going and robbing a pharmacy of these medications because they have an addiction, putting them through a drug court to where they can not only, you know, serve their time, but also get treatment while they're, you know, serving their time and you know, being brought to justice. We think that once they have served their time and come back into society, they are able to be productive members of society who lead healthy lives. And simply warehousing them and letting them out when their time is up, that addiction, without addressing that addiction while they're being, while they're incarcerated or wherever they are, that doesn't solve the problem.
Andraka Christou thinks instead of a war on drugs mentality, the government needs to come out with a public health approach and provide significant treatment for those suffering from substance use disorders. She champions treatment that uses medication to alleviate addictions. Cloud also recommends behavioral psychosocial treatment and is pushing for drug courts and prisons in states like Indiana to expand the use of these treatments so more drug users can receive quality treatment. Quality treatment should be available outside the legal realm as well, whether they are referred voluntarily or involuntarily. The National Institute on Drug Abuse says the treatment does not have to be voluntary to be effective. So, Cloud recommends states adopt involuntary treatment laws. Indiana is moving in that direction. On May 5th, Governor Mike Pence signed the Jennifer Act into law, giving Indiana new involuntary treatment legislation. Once it goes into effect on July 1st, it will bring increased inpatient substance abuse detoxification services and medication-assisted treatment for substance abuse. It will also require information and training being given to judges, prosecutors, and public defenders regarding diversion programs, probationary programs, and involuntary commitment, thus making a move towards CLAD's recommended policies. CLAD also recommends involuntary treatment policies for those who make an emergency room visit due to non-fatal overdose. To ensure fatal overdoses don't occur, CLAD is pushing for states to provide prescriptions for naloxone. Andraka Christou speaks to its benefits.
If it appears someone is going into a state of overdose, you can give it to them and it'll precipitate immediate withdrawals. So it's life-saving. I think it's extremely important for these types of laws to be passed, allowing people to fill this prescription and, you know, not on behalf of themselves, but on behalf of others.
This past spring, Indiana United States Senator Joe Donnelly reintroduced a bipartisan bill called the Heroin and Prescription Opioid Abuse Prevention, Education, and Enforcement Act of 2015. The bill would provide for a grant program to allow eligible first responders to obtain and effectively administer approved opioid overdose reversal drugs. Senator Donnelly said the bill calls for a federal effort to establish best practices for prescribing pain relievers and pain management to help doctors effectively treat their patients and identify those at risk for addiction. Effective prevention and effective treatment. Championing both of these, CLAD and others help to create a safer and healthier American community in the future. Even Indiana, viewed as a state with a predominantly conservative legislature, is adopting more progressive policies. For WFHB, I'm Jordan Guskey.
CLAD also has recommendations for policies on a collegiate level. Indiana University is considering the development of a recovery community at the Bloomington campus in the near future. Stay tuned to WFHB to hear that story later this month.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and Smithville Fiber, a local provider of high-speed internet, voice, and TV. Smithville now offers security systems for homes and businesses. More information on Smithville's full line of services is available online at smithville.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, and make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, I'm Philip Addison with Monroe County Civic Theater. I became involved with Monroe County Civic Theater about 2001 when I was in my friend's car and found a program for As You Like It and saw that there were auditions coming up for Merchant of Venice, and I thought to myself, well, I haven't done theater since college, why not give it a try? What keeps me coming back is I wrote a play back in the 90s and I got involved with Merchant of Venice, and then they said, well, we need plays for our director's symposium, and I said, I wrote a play. And they let me direct it and produced it, and I kept coming back and got on the board, and here I am. I look at it as directing as you're a one-room schoolhouse teacher, where you have seniors who've paid their dues and all that, and then you've got the kindergartners who don't know what they're doing, and you have to, like, weave it all together to one thing and then actually produce a product where everyone's on the same page. The most unique aspect of Monroe County Civic Theater is the diversity we have in our volunteers. You have people from the community, you have people from the university, you have people from outside the community, and it's a conglomeration of people with different interests and different experiences making something that's enjoyable to watch. This year we're doing one of Shakespeare's lesser-known plays, Cymbeline, It's a late romance, and I chose this because I felt Bloomington was ready for something different, something other than Romeo and Juliet or Midsummer Night's Dream, something that just kind of shakes you and says, hey, Shakespeare wrote some other stuff too. Let's delve into it and see what we got. I'm looking for Monroe County Civic Theater to build on what it has and expand and make the most of what we have here in this community with the volunteers and the choice of plays that we have, and just make it a stronger community theater where it can rival Terre Haute or Indianapolis and be a force to be reckoned with. Thanks for listening. I'm Philip Addison with Monroe County Civic Theater.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organizational profile and current volunteer needs at bloomingtonvolunteernetwork.org. Now here's a rundown of volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County. For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake, with three ways to hit the stage as a volunteer. Volunteer with Monroe County Civic Theater, Bloomington's longest-serving all-volunteer amateur community theater organization. Volunteers can get involved as actors, stage crew, costume collections monitors, musicians, and more. Cardinal Stage is looking for passionate individuals who are dedicated to making great theater and who are looking for a chance to be a part of something amazing every day. The team at Cardinal Stage is working hard to build a world-class regional theater, and they'd like you to join them. Or support the Bloomington Playwrights Project as a volunteer for its annual Arts Fair on the Square on June 20th. Volunteers help with artist hospitality, setup and teardown, and the proceeds help the BPP bring new plays to our community. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake. You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Whitaker. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate.
This has been the Daily Local News on WFHB, supported by Smithfield Fiber, a local provider of high-speed internet, TV, voice, and security services. Today's headlines were written by David Murphy for Cats Week, which is a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Kara Tolman, Jordan Guskey, and Sierra Gardner.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Whitaker, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Maria McKinley. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Now stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.